On this episode of A New York Minute in History, we sit down with New York Secretary of State and co-chair of the New York State Commission on African American History, Walter Mosley, and discuss the recommendations and work the commission has done over the past several years. That conversation is coming up next, right after this.
From the American Revolution and the Underground Railroad to trailblazing women in medicine and paleontology, every story on A New York Minute in History begins with a William G. Pomeroy Foundation historical marker. Each one highlights a person, a place, or a moment in history waiting to be discovered. I'm historian and archivist Susan Hughes. The Pomeroy Foundation is the proud sponsor of this podcast. Founded by Bill Pomeroy, the foundation is a grant-making organization based in Syracuse, New York. We help people celebrate and preserve their local history by providing grants that fully fund historical markers in towns and cities across America. Since 2005, we have awarded 3,000 marker grants nationwide. Every Pomeroy marker we fund tells a story, honors a legacy, and strengthens the fabric of a community. What truly sets our markers apart is our unwavering commitment to historical accuracy, our gold standard. Interested in bringing a Pomeroy marker to your community? Learn about our marker grant programs and our student research curriculum at wgpfoundation.org. That's wgpfoundation.org.
Welcome to A New York Minute in History. I'm Lauren Roberts, the Saratoga County historian. In honor of African American History Month, we're taking a look back at some of the historic markers that we've focused on in past episodes that tell some pretty incredible stories about African American history in New York State. We were honored to actually be at an unveiling for the marker for Garnett Douglas Baltimore, who was the first Black graduate of RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. He was a civil engineer who was incredibly influential around the city of Troy and other places in New York State. We've also talked about Sojourner Truth and her groundbreaking 1828 court case down in Ulster County, where she attempted to free her son. We've talked about Frederick Douglass and the North Star in Rochester, New York. In thinking about the American Revolution, we talked about the 1st Rhode Island Regiment, which was the first all-Black regiment in the American Revolution, and also Plymouth Freeman, who was a Black soldier in the American Revolution, who was awarded a medal for his service. Some of the others that we've talked about, even going back further in our history, La Amistad, with the Africans that were kidnapped and revolted, and that ship landing off of Long Island, and the incredible work of people like Dr. Georgette Greer Key, who have used a marker to remind the people in their community of this important part of their history. We've talked about the Florence Farming Association and Timbuktu. These are African American settlements where people of color were trying to establish settlements and better their lives amongst adversity in lots of different ways. We talked about the Rapp Road community and the Great Migration in the Capital Region with people moving up from the South. We've talked about slavery and resistance in New York. We've talked about Verdell Lewis Payne. He was a Tuskegee Airman from Ithaca, New York. And of course, Aaron Moselle and the struggle to integrate Lockport's school system. All of these stories we have really enjoyed learning about in the past, and maybe you would like to go back and listen to these episodes to remind yourselves of the incredible stories that we can tell through historic markers. All of these episodes can be found at WAMC.org and WAMCpodcast.org. So go ahead and give those a listen. And now we're privileged to sit down with New York Secretary of State Walter Mosley, who is serving as co-chair of the New York State African American History Commission. There are an amazing amount of stories across New York's long history that are fascinating, and many of them I hadn't heard of before doing this podcast.
It is, because one story kind of begets another story, right? And it goes on from there.
Yeah. And so part of, you know, we're lucky enough to have this podcast where we can talk about these things. And so that it brings the point that many people haven't heard these stories.
Yeah.
And so in your role as the chair of the New York State African American History Commission, I'm kind of wondering, when you look at your own background, what do you remember about learning about Black and African American history in New York State as you were growing up,
yeah,
or as you know, going through your education,
yeah,
you know, that kind of informed the role that you, yeah, play now?
Yeah. Well, you know, as a kid who grew up in Brooklyn, oftentimes, you know, anybody who lives in a city, you know, or any place of that matter that has a lot of historical references, you take for granted, you know, what's around you, right? And so I had a lot of people who were of themselves like historical figures, you know, in my midst, you know. But the one thing I do remember growing up, I went to Montessori school, and so it was a pretty progressive type of, you know, academic experience. But even within that progressive academic experience, Black history was, you know, kind of couched into slavery and the civil rights movement. And that was pretty much it. You know, you pick your heroes or sheroes based upon that kind of segment within our nation's history and our state's history. But the one thing that I've, you know, when I matriculated to high school and then to college, where I then became like a kind of like, I was an African-American and African history major. And so I got to learn so much more about who I was, and there's like this kind of this ebbs and flow you go through in terms of finding out more about yourself. First you become angry, excited. Then you become angry and upset that, why didn't I get to learn this when I was much younger? And then you come to an understanding that, you know what, even with what I'm learning now, it's just the surface, that there's so much, and they all are, and that everyone's history is kind of interconnected, you know, with one another, regardless of where you, your ethnicity, your quote-unquote race, your sex, or and your socioeconomic standing. And that's where the learning truly, you know, emanates in a way that it can be a part of you, but it's also something that you feel pride in sharing, because you can always find a common denominator that, you know, you can share with someone who is of Irish ancestry or German ancestry or you know, from any of the 63 nations that make up Africa, or from Southeast Asia. Those are the things that when you talk about American history, you start to realize that American history is so much more diverse than what we've become accustomed to, unfortunately, in a learned environment we call our educational system.
Yeah. And so having that experience, you become Secretary of State,
yeah,
New York, and Governor Hochul has put into place the commission in,
yeah,
2022. And you come in 2024 as the chair.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what that was like?
Okay, so some of this predates me, right? So my predecessor, Robert Rodriguez, who now sits as our president and CEO of DASNY, was the co-chair when he was in the position of Secretary of State, along with Hazel Dukes, the late, great Hazel Dukes, president emeritus of the New York State Conference for the NAACP. From there, in 2022, the Executive Order 15, which, if people are aware, Executive Order 15 is also the same executive order that was granted after the Civil War in terms of providing resources and reallocation of wealth and land to the recently freed enslaved Africans following the Civil War. So Executive Order 15 is symbolic of the Executive Order 15 back then. 15 members were selected, 7 by the governor, 3, the rest were equally divided between the Assembly Majority, Assembly Minority, Senate Leadership, and Senate Minority Leadership. From there, a commission was created of 22 individuals. They met in that led a portion of 2022, and as a result, they came up with these 22 recommendations, which was then released in 2024. From there, these recommendations have been given to us as a commission to implement how do we the money that were allocated for this commission, how do we disperse it, how do we use it in a way that's most beneficial to not only the Black and African American community, but to all New Yorkers who need to be aware of all things that are germane to the impact that African Americans and Black New Yorkers have made, you know, for the betterment of our state.
So can you tell us a little bit about the recommendations? So that's a lot of recommendations to try to, you know, to try to incorporate. What were some that really stuck out to you that you thought this is a priority? Let's try to really implement these first.
Well, I think some of the ones that stood out to me were like the more obvious ones in terms of how do we preserve landmarks? How do we preserve, you know, buildings and sites? Obviously, we do this in conjunction with our Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation sister agency. You know, another one that kind of stood out was how do we implement all of these recommendations when it comes to the pedagogical perspective? How do we educate, and how do we put that into our environment? How do we put this into our learning environment? You know, for children who are matriculating through grade school and high school throughout the state of New York. I think obviously there's some that in terms of creating the Hazel Dukes Fellowship, which is named after obviously Dr. Hazel Dukes, and having that individual continuing to work on finding ways in which we can further expand possibilities and recommendations that might have been thought of during this initial wave of recommendations, because we understand that history is always ongoing and always evolving. I think those are probably some of the three things that kind of stand out to me. But there are a number of recommendations that I think emanating from this actual commission that I believe were really, really on target. And from, you know, I will also give credit to the commission is that they did not think it was just upon them to come up with recommendations. They went on statewide tours all throughout New York State, laid a portion of 2022, and took recommendations from individuals from all walks of life. And from there, they, you know, took all that information in and came up with these recommendations.
And so are the recommendations now being implemented? Is that the stage that the commission's at right now?
Yeah, so we're in a stage right now. The governor allocated $16 million to this commission. Obviously, we have to be very mindful of how we spend those dollars, and very, you know, diligent in terms of those dollars or how are they being spent to meet out the recommendations by the commission. So right now we are, you know, obviously putting together RFPs, we're putting together programming, you know, in affiliation with other sister agencies. So that takes a lot of collaboration and coordination amongst a whole bunch of people from different state agencies. And then obviously we got to make sure that, you know, we give it to the department, and then we give it to the governor to get approval. So it takes time, but, you know, we waited this long, and I don't think a few months or a few weeks is going to, you know, hurt us, as long as we do what was recommended and we get the right outcomes. One of the recommendations that I find quite interesting is how do we look at public policy that has been shaped based upon the inequities that come out of, you know, the slave movement, and how they still shape public policy today. So how do we talk about that? How do we, you know, teach young people about that? How do we teach, you know, teachers and people who are in the system teaching already, and those who are matriculating through college who want to become teachers, certified teachers? So, you know, that all takes, you know, working with, you know, State University of New York, working with our state ed department, and Dr. Rosa, who's our commissioner, and Dr. Lester Young, who's the region chair. So those conversations that have to be had, and they're almost kind of being taking place almost simultaneously. So to make sure that we kind of focus on that, make sure that we do it in the right way, while at the same time being sensitive to other people's needs and demands, you know, we have to do that as representatives of all New Yorkers.
I serve on the New York State 250th Commission, And we have a, you know, a big anniversary coming up. So we, you know, kind of feel the pressure, right? The anniversary is knocking on our door. Now, I know that there are a couple anniversaries coming up. 2026 is the 200th year of the first 11 enslaved people that were brought to New Amsterdam. And then 2027.
11 and 9 depends on who you ask.
Okay. So the first several enslaved people that were brought to New Amsterdam. And then 2027 is the 200th anniversary of the final gradual emancipation, the end of slavery in New York.
Right, exactly.
So in thinking about those types of things, is the commission looking to do commemorative programming or, you know, anything for those anniversaries?
Yeah, without question. You know, obviously we have other bicentennial, you know, groups and organizations. Obviously, we just did the celebration of the Erie Canal, and we kind of intertwined some of what they celebrated along the Erie Canal, understanding the importance of the Erie Canal in regards to indigenous folks and in regards to enslaved Africans who are looking for a better place, in regards to the women's movement, in regards to the modern-day civil rights movement. All emanate from, in large part, because of the developments and the people who congregated along the Erie Canal. So we were a part of that in small part. But again, these next two huge celebrations that we're looking to kind of highlight in the state of New York will have a significant portion of that focusing in on, you know, the Black community, the African American community, and the anniversaries that we'll be acknowledging. Obviously, some won't be celebrating, but we'll acknowledge them and their importance, because I often tell people that enslavement wasn't a part of our history. Enslavement is a part of what we had to overcome, and our history is what we've overcome and what we've accomplished, even in spite of enslavement. So we're looking forward to those conversations, and obviously, we're going to be coordinated with sister state agencies who are going to be a part of that. We got an exhibit that's going to be in the State Museum. And I'm very keenly aware of the notion that whatever we put in those state museums are going to be representative and of what we're trying to convey to folks. And what we don't want to convey is that, again, slavery is not our history. Slavery is just something we overcame. And I stress that to my staff over and over again. And I stress that to their counterparts at State Museum and the like, to understand that we have to kind of look at that period of our state and of our nation in a different way, because when we don't, we tend to put out misleading judgments and perspectives about certain people. Because if I only look at a person, I see a descendant of slaves, then I'm only going to look at that person in that regard. I'm not going to look at that person, you know, beyond that. And messaging, imagery is critically important as it relates to, you know, how we disseminate the recommendations of the commission.
Along with those anniversaries and, you know, working with the State Museum and the exhibit that's going to go along with that, tourism and heritage tourism in particular is a big part of anniversaries, both, you know, celebratory and commemorative. So I thought I read in that one of the recommendations had to do with travel. And I thought that was so interesting. I just met with a travel writer from New York City talking about the Battle of Saratoga. And, he was very interested in African-American history in Saratoga Springs and during the battles. So people who come to different anniversary events really want to see themselves reflected in the history. No matter whether it's about the Revolutionary War or, the mineral springs at Saratoga. Right. I'm using my own examples because that's what I'm familiar with. But in thinking about heritage tourism and how much money it brings into, especially the state of New York, you know, how Is that something that you want to focus on for, bringing people to spots that are important around African-American history?
And like I said, you know, this has been an ongoing learning experience for me. So, for instance, location of Timbuktu, which is in North Elba, which is
a town. Actually did a podcast episode on that.
So, you know, that
the
people tend to just look at this maybe in isolation. And if they look beyond the surface, and obviously they know why it was created in terms of further emancipating African-American men who were formerly enslaved and giving them a plot of land, which at the time required by New York State to vote, you had to own land or own property. And as a result, although the experiment did not come fully to fruition in terms of its outcome, its desired outcome, it did serve as a precipice of how we look at, emancipation. So how do we look at, further indoctrinating someone's franchise? That you had to be a landowner. You had to have a home. But the backstory of it is obviously one of our most famous abolitionists. Would also, add to that and have several plots of land to add to Gareth Smith's idea of Timbuktu. He would go on, unfortunately, to lose his life in the invasion of Dobbs Ferry, which was the precursor to the Civil War. And if you look at Timbuktu, obviously many of your listeners know that Timbuktu is one of the most learned institutions in all of the Eastern Hemisphere, that includes all of Europe, where people would come to learn and be educated at a very sophisticated level. And that was housed in Mali. Mali, as you know, is the home of probably the most the richest man who ever lived on the face of Earth. And that's Mansa Musa, who came over to what we call the Americas back in the 1300s, was trading with indigenous people back then, back and forth, and that's well documented. There are stories within stories that allow, if you dig, just you don't have to dig too much, but if you just drill down just a little bit, you can just learn so much more about, why things are named the way they're, why they're named this, or who was involved and who, added on to it, and what were their backstories, I think I'm here for a reason in this time, because as a lover of history, and an appreciation of history, being one of the named co-chairs for this commission, it's probably one of the greatest honors I could have as secretary.
In your talking about Timbuktu, it reminds me of your statements before about, slavery not being a part of your history, but about something you overcame. When you think about what the people who went to, I'm talking about the North Elba Timbuktu from Gareth Smith, and thinking about what they had to overcome just in order to be able to vote in New York State, it seems like that's a pretty strong theme in New York State's African-American history.
And then likewise, the audacity for Gareth Smith to do what he did then, just imagine what type of, what he had to overcome and all the obstacles that might have been placed, his way, So again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier, is that the historical stories are not just germane to African-Americans, but they're germane to us as a state, us as New Yorkers, and us as kind of the precursor as to how our nation would unfold. And so I always think the more you learn about yourself, the more you learn about others, because we just didn't do this in a vacuum. There had to be other people who provided the resources, the planning, the audacity to think beyond what was the norm, and to understand that it a multitude of people from different ethnicities to be here, to make us be here in the state that we live in today.
So what's next for the commission? What do we have to look forward to coming out of?
Well, obviously, like you said, the two anniversaries that are coming up. We're looking forward to that. The I Love New York Black Travel Initiative, the Hazel Duke, like I said, the fellowship that we're looking to put in place and hire a qualified individual, our Black Leadership Institute at the State University of New York, as well as our commission study for reparations and racial justice. Those are things that we're looking forward to, but these upcoming celebrations, these anniversary celebrations, we're looking forward to, you know, how do we put ourselves forward in earnest for the most part for the first time. We're just looking forward to all of these things, because even as a legislature, we would talk about these issues and kind of like in isolation from a public policy perspective. But the governor had the foresight and she had the courage to, you know, make this one of her most significant initiatives from an executive order perspective. And she could have picked anything, but she picked this commission to create. And for that, you know, she deserves a lot of credit because I'm sure she wasn't uniformly, you know, accepted. You know, there wasn't uniformity in terms of accepting this, but she understood the importance of it. And she understands the importance of not only helping to advance and highlight the history that African-Americans and Black New Yorkers have made here in the state of New York, but how it has benefited all New Yorkers up until this very day. Are we perfect? No. We strive for perfection, and I think this was a major step towards that pathway, towards that ultimate end goal. So I give the governor all the credit in the world.
Great. I want to thank you for your time and your insight into this commission, and for all of the commissioners, all of the work that they did in gathering the information. As you know, our state is huge and diverse, and all of the communities, speaking as a local historian, our communities have such diverse history, they are very passionate about what they believe is their history.
Yes.
You know, the things that they really see as their identity. It's important to communities. So it's so when you have a commission of only 15 people going out around this state and trying to gather what people on the street really feel passionate about, it is yeoman's work, very difficult. So, you know, to all of the commissioners that were a part of it, and I'm sure all of the subcommittees and consultants that also did that work, it's a huge task. And it's so great that they were able to come up with so many recommendations, which it sounds like are well on their way to implementation.
My title is co-chair, but, you know, the people who do the work, you know, the commissioners, you know, this is voluntary. And for them to have taken the time to travel, have these meetings all across the state, you know, we couldn't pay them enough, because, you know, the work that they've done and continue to do will, I believe, put New York again at the forefront of showing the rest of the nation how we can embrace history without having to be difficult amongst one another. And I think now more than ever, that's needed.
Thanks for listening to A New York Minute in History. This podcast is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and the New York State Museum, with support from the William G. Pomeroy Foundation. Our producer is Aaron Shello Levine. A big thanks to Secretary of State Walter Mosley for taking part. If you enjoyed this month's episode, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and share on social media. To learn more about our guests and the show, check us out at WAMC.org. We're also on X and Instagram at NY History Minute. I'm Lauren Roberts. Until next time, Excelsior.